Good evening. You are very welcome to this week's episode of Let's Go Green here on Midlands 103. I hope you are safe and well as you tune in this evening and that you've had a fantastic week since we last spoke. I'm your host, Aisling O'Rourke, and each week we try to tackle some issues around environment, sustainability, and of course, how we can do our bit at home to tackle climate change. And this week, I want to talk about our homes, because at the end of the day, it's where we spend most of our time now, particularly after all of those lockdowns. But, you know, we are aware that we're going to have to make some changes in how we live and in how we construct our homes. And in particular this evening, we're going to be focusing in on retrofitting. So I hope you stay tuned and you enjoy the program. And please do give me a follow on Twitter at Aisling O'Rourke or on Instagram at Aisling Makes Stories. Now, we're joined to talk about retrofitting in particular this evening by David Flannery. And David is the head retrofit advisor at Electric Ireland Superhomes. Now, I know before we even get into the conversation that there are many independent operators in the retrofitting game right around the Midlands. But we thought that if we could take a national view as to what services are available out there, then that would give you a little bit of information and you can go maybe a little bit closer to home. But David, welcome to Let's Go Green this evening.
Hi, Aisling. Nice to talk to you.
Now, David, retrofitting, it has been in the media quite consistently, I would say, over the last 12 months. We've been doing an awful lot of talking about it. But I think on the practical side of things, it can seem really very overwhelming as to where one would even start. So if, for argument's sake, for our conversation this evening, we took the average, say, 1960s bungalow, oil-fired central heating, detached home here in the Midlands. Where should we begin if we think we need to, or we want to even, bring our home up to 2022 standards and include a bit of future-proofing? Because I know it can be really overwhelming for people.
Yeah, I think overwhelming is the right term to use, Aisling, because I suppose when you start doing something in your house, I mean, we've all got experience time gone by where we might have done something and then had to go back over it again because it wasn't maybe the proper choice at the time, or might have started in the wrong area, might have upgraded something and find out it could have been done a different way. And so I suppose often trying to get the best advice about what to do can be the first challenge, or to come up with a plan. So we'd always treat the house as a system, and that's kind of what it is when you think about it. You have your heat generation, you have your insulation to keep the heat within the house as much as possible, and you have things like ventilation and draft and so on, all of which kind of have interact with both of those things. So I suppose to make things very simple, you know, we can say fabric first is the approach. In other words, like, as that part of the system, keep the heat in the house as much as possible. You know, that's the number one step to take. But I suppose then you start thinking about, well, could I do all of this together? And what would be entailed in doing it all together if I was to do that? In other words, so I suppose that's like one installation where you might do your insulation, your energy generation, so an improved heating system. And you might look at things like windows and ventilation and so on as part of one plan and one process. So I suppose the SEI have introduced a one-stop shop scheme, which I think you touched on earlier on, that there is a national element to it because some of these are going to be bigger companies. But then on a regional basis, they're going to have lots of contractors that are going to be working all through Offaly and through every region of Ireland over the next year or two. So the one-stop shop was really designed, well, maybe we cast our mind back to prior to the one-stop shop, and oftentimes people, you know, they want to do the best thing at the home and they want the best advice. They might have commissioned a BER and they get a BER back, and the BER, well, was fairly basic and it might tell you what your energy rating is. Some of the things as part of a boilerplate sort of list of recommendations, and you have it in your hand, they go, well, okay, that's fine. Maybe it doesn't tell me what order to do it or what the best thing to do is. But even if it does and it's clear, you know, well, that's fine. Now, who do I get to do it?
You know?
And so,
and even on the BER, because I know we've all gotten very used to the BER rating. I bought my own home in 2020 and I had to do the BER rating, like get somebody out to look at it as part of the whole mortgage side of things. And I found it really fascinating. My home, I've now upgraded it since, but it was electric heating. And the advice at the time on the BER form was to switch to oil or gas. And I'm going, hold on a second, that's not really good for the environment. Or like I know other people have maybe done a bit of extra insulation, but because the BER, the person who came out to do the BER check couldn't physically access their walls without tearing them apart to see the insulation, then it didn't impact the BER rating. It didn't go towards that grading that you get.
Yeah, and you've touched on something which is very prevalent. Nobody knows what's in the walls, really. So you have to go by the year in which it was built, and to some extent hope that it was built to the standard at the time, and so that you can kind of predict what insulation might be in a cavity, for instance, or if you've got internal dry lining, you know, trying to figure out what that is, because you might have a BER, which is basically your projected energy use, and so that's it'll say one thing on paper, and then you got to make sure, of course, in reality, that it's performing according to the BER. I mean, like a lot of people might have BERs, and the house still feels cold. So there's more to a retrofit and energy upgrade than just achieving something on the BER.
So, David, if we were to, let's say, we look at oil central heating, right? I know, like many people in the Midlands, like it's in many areas of the Midlands, there's no access to gas. So, you know, that's the predominant heat source will be by oil fired central heating. And, you know, a home is an investment. You buy it with the intention of living in it for several years, and you maybe upgrade it, redecorate it, you know, put your own stamp on it over a number of years. And now, as we learn that to do the right thing by the environment, we need to switch away from oil, which I don't think anybody's really arguing against. There is that fear that, oh God, does this mean I need to start ripping up my floors? Do I need to start ripping radiators off the wall? Like, how major is it to switch from oil-fired central heating to an alternative?
Yeah, I suppose that's where the plan comes in. So we spoke earlier on about the BER, you know, and what to do with that. And sort of like our approach would be, well, listen, when you get a report, then you got a list of recommendations that show you, well, if you're to move away from oil, what it would cost you, what your BER benefit would be, what your savings would be over time. And also then an opportunity to do it with a cost. So at least you know what the cost is. And then you can see what the grant is as well. And you can make a properly informed choice at that point, really, to see if it's the way to go. But I suppose there's a lot of learning still involved, generally speaking, when it comes to heat pumps. Heat pumps are an excellent technology, but as long as you put it into a heat pump ready house. So like years back when there was the ground source heat pumps that put in first, people's bills are very high. And the reason why that was, nothing wrong with the heat pump and nothing wrong with the insulation, it's just that the house wasn't well insulated and it was drafty. And hence too much electricity has been used. So now there's something in place which is called the heat loss indicator. So in other words, all of your building envelope has to meet a certain standard and you can't have drafts running through it, and then the heat pump works well. But the heat pump works perfectly well with radiators. This is kind of idea as well that, you know, I have to be a little bit careful about, like, everything has to be practically possible, right? So it's all very well saying, well, look, underfloor heating is better than radiators, which it is, but it's only marginally better, you know.
And I suppose
it would never justify digging up a floor to do that. So radiators
that's just it to see,
perfectly fine.
And like the reason I asked the question is that we are getting more sustainably minded. So we're like, you know, why would you rip up a perfectly good oak floor that's been there for 30 or 40 years? It still looks good. It's still beautiful. It's, you know, I don't want to damage that. So how do I make the switch while maintaining as much of the fabric of the home as possible?
Yeah, well, exactly. So we're sending a message out there that things like that, you know, in terms of serious building works like floors and things like that, are not part of a, generally speaking, part of a retrofit.
Okay.
So you gotta work what's there. Right? So even for radiators, I mean, there's an assumption that you need to change all your radiators with a heat pump. Now, maybe you do if they're already old, but again, you would design this in. So look, it used to be a time, I suppose, where the heating installer or plumber 20, 30 years ago might have just made a judgment call on what size radiator. Well, everything is done now already. It's design-led, right? So you measure each room. You spec out a radiator that matches the requirements of that room. And look, if the one is there is sufficient, you keep it. If it's way off, you know, you change it, right? Because you want a nice even temperature at the house. So everything is part of a design plan. So there's no chance of taking it. And whatever's good that's there, whether it's doors or windows, and if you can reach the standards by keeping it, well then, well and good, you know, they should be kept. So there's a level of bespokeness, or you really have to look. Well, I often give an example maybe of a 1970s estate where once every single house was the same, and just over the last 40 years, somebody would have put an attic conversion in, someone would have done an extension, another person would have put in a triple glaze or double glaze, whatever. So you really need to look at everyone's house individually to come up with a plan for that. And that's probably the first part of the process.
And I think that's a really valid point. Like, I know when I renovated my own home in 2020, I have a very, very nice, kind, patient electrician who talked me through the best smart electric system within my budget. And he said, look, you contact the company, you give the company your floor plan, and they calculate which radiators you need in which room. And because I was purchasing the property, I had the floor plan on email, very handy. And I literally did. I just sent it over to them. Next thing, straight back within 24 hours, I got a little spreadsheet with, well, in the living room, you need this size of radiator. In the bedrooms, you need this. Like, it was very simple. And it really, because electric works are not in my mindset. I'm not an electrician or an engineer. And it was something that was very daunting for me. But actually, it was very simple to do. So it's nice to hear that this is a widespread practice. To be honest, at the time, I thought I just got lucky with the company that I was dealing with. So, okay, so you can go to your one-stop shop. You can you get your survey done. You get the recommendations. And then you do things like, okay, assess the size of the room, the floor plan, the house, I should say. And then you're going to have to take a look at the radiator as well. Are they relatively new, or maybe they're older models? And maybe what you're suggesting here is you might have to change out one or two. But you could be lucky. You might not have to change out or rip out all of your radiators.
Yeah, exactly. Make a judgment call. Nobody should be able to tell you that without doing a proper design on it. You know, okay. Because there's no way of figuring it out without doing the homework. And there's choices in terms of retrofit as well. So might be the windows are 20 odd years old, and it might be on the cusp. Let's say there's 30 years is the typical time frame that you, or the lifespan of windows. So it might be choices like, I can do external wall insulation and keep the windows, or I can upgrade the triple glazed windows and I can just pump the cavity. You know, so that the overall effect of your improvements brings the house up to a good standard, rather than just doing, let's say, the best of everything, like putting on every upgrade and fire, because the targets are very high and strict. And so if you can reach the targets in the most cost effective way, that's the way you should look at first. And that might be the case that the whole house is the way to go. And look, sometimes a lot of time, because of, you know, it isn't cheap. Sometimes, you know, just have to do what you can do in terms of pumping the cavity, upgrading the attic, all of these basic things, which will always be done no matter what your plans are in future.
But at least then, if you have that plan, that design, okay, you might not be able to do every single thing in 2022, but you could pick a job or a couple of jobs to tackle this year. And then maybe a few years down the line, you'll tackle the next. And you could break it up that it's more doable according to your own budget.
Absolutely. So I suppose everything comes down to your target, right? So where's your destination? We'd always say a heat pump. Well, we believe it's the best heating technology, but it also means if you get to a standard, if your house gets to a standard where a heat pump will work there and sufficient and it's grant eligible, it means all the rest of the house is good, right? Because it's draft free and your insulation is a high standard. So however, whatever step, so you might have bought a boiler last year, well and good, it's more efficient than the one that was there before, okay? You know, and it might be just the case that you want to upgrade your boiler whenever it's come to the end of life, okay? Mm-hmm. It might be 7 or 8 or 10 years down the line. But that what you're doing in the meantime brings you close to that good standard where you can put a heat pump in whenever that is. And all of this will be the same part, same plan, but just done in installments over time rather than done at once.
And then, like, obviously, even with the best heat pump in the world, as you pointed out earlier, if you've got a drafty house, if those windows are maybe letting in a bit too much air from outside, that's, you know, you're still going to have a cold house. So, and I know, I suppose with COVID, and I hate mentioning COVID because we're all fed up of it, But we did actually learn about the importance of ventilation. And like, yes, you want to have an airtight house in that it's not letting heat out. But, you know, if we get a summer like we did last July in 2021, we want to be able to let air in to cool down. So how, like, that seems like a complete minefield to me. Like, what, where do you go when it comes to the windows? How do you even start looking at what you've got?
Yeah, and that's, I suppose, just give sort of, this is like a half, sometimes a kind of a halfway house. So you can start off by doing some insulation. And let's say, you know, you want your whole house at the end of it to be overhauled with a heat pump in at the end of it, whether you do it at once or maybe do it over time. Then you kind of get into that sort of middle part where you're doing things in your house and you're not 100% sure what the effect will be, right? So yeah. Windows is a good example. And it's just sometimes, every house is different and there's different amount of people in the house. Will be using different amount of cooking and all that. So nobody knows exactly how one house is going to perform, right, for, let's say, for ventilation or for moisture control. So sometimes, a lot of times, people put in windows, new windows. And of course, the new windows are better than the ones, you know, before, better U value. But a lot of the improvement for windows is going to be how they're installed. So previously, it might be the case that they were installed 20, 30 years ago. Airtightness wasn't much of a factor in people's thinking at that point, right? And so the fact that they're installed properly now, you might, a lot of that ventilation that was previously coming around by the window frames might not be coming in anymore. And suddenly the house gets a bit more airtight. So, you know, in that case, sometimes you might get a bit of condensation. But certainly the house will change a bit to be less drafty. But the thing about ventilation and airtightness is controlling, maybe increasing, maybe decreasing the amount of ventilation that's coming to your house, but being able to control it so you know what's coming in rather than big gale force coming to your house, or sometimes mm-hmm. not enough. And that's where there's a judgment call in relation to some of these things.
Okay. And that's a really good point. Like, as in, the window itself might actually be fine, but there may be gaps around the edges of it. And I know I spoke to a cousin of mine recently who was helping renovate a house, and they didn't hire a contractor to pump the walls with the insulation. They just did it themselves. And he didn't realize that this insulation would find those little gaps. And he said, an hour after he started doing, he was seeing all these little purple dots around one window in particular. And when he thought about it, he used to say, God, yeah, Mammy used to always complain that was a really drafty window. And now I can see, I never noticed gaps before, but now this foam has obviously found them. So, like, is this part of this everything that we're talking about tonight, like this one-stop shop idea through the SEAI or yourselves or your local contract, are these the kind of maybe red flags or issues that we should be expecting to find out as we go through this whole assessment process?
Yeah, exactly. It kind of goes back to what we spoke about earlier about the house, you know, is a system, okay? And so when you intervene, I suppose, in that system, it's just making sure that the knock-on effects or the consequences are, you know, they're properly planned for. So, like, you know, when you put together a plan, which is the ideal way to do it, to do it all at once, that's not always feasible. Fully accept that it's not the cheapest way by any means to do it. But if you can put together a plan, which is about looking at how your house performs at the end, and how all of these things interact, and you do so in the best practice, well, then it's much more predictable about how things will perform in the end, and how moisture control and ventilation and overall performance of the house will work. So, and you get a heating redesign and upgrade as part of it as well. So, moving everything together at once is, well, it makes sense, is the best way to do it if it's at all feasible.
Well, David, if you don't mind, we might take a short break there and come back in a few moments' time with some listener questions. We'll be back after the break. You're listening to Let's Go Green here on Midlands 103. I'm Aisling O'Rourke, and tonight we are joined by David Flannery from Electric Ireland's Super Homes team. Now, David, one of the reasons I was so keen to tackle this particular topic on the show was immediately after the show was announced, listeners got in contact with me telling me what they wanted to hear on the show. And remember, listeners, you can do so by sending me an email to letsgogreen@midlands103.com. Well, Nuala got in contact, and Nuala was saying, look, she has this cottage. She loves it. She loves where she lives. Great lifestyle altogether. But it's an older cottage and she doesn't really know how to bring it up to modern day, environmentally friendly, future proofed standards. Now, Nuala sent us in a voice note. So, David, let's listen to Nuala's question.
Hi, Aisling. It's Nuala here. I live in the countryside near Birr. I have a housing commission cottage from the 1950s. It's basically a concrete, there's no insulation in this house. So, you know, it's kind of a very basic house when we got it. So since then, we've kind of done a few small bits and bobs for insulation through the various grants that are available. But whenever the new grants came out, we were really excited that, you know, there was an opportunity there to possibly retrofit the cottage and bring it up to standard, you know, to sort of coincide with the new thinking, with the, you know, being able to bring our house up to a more green standard. So I suppose my question is, you know, for the ordinary person like myself with an old cottage, what are the steps to take to be able to apply for grants? What grants are available, and what is the most simple process to do that for someone like myself?
So, David, Nuala's in a housing commission concrete cottage out in rural Birr, out in the countryside beyond Birr, and really struggling to get our head around the grants that are available or even where to start going to look for information. So what advice would you give Nuala?
Okay, so Nuala mentions that she's carried out some small upgrades. I would assume possibly that might be a door or attic insulation. So what you have there, you've got a concrete wall, which the only way to insulate those walls is to do it internally or externally. A lot of people would do external, particularly if it's a smaller cottage, because, you know, you'd be taking less room out of your house. So from an insulation point of view, that's something like that would be quite obvious.
So, David, when you say external, does that mean that you're like cladding the house with some kind of insulation?
Yeah, so it's like insulation board onto the external of the house, and then it's plastered over it again. So, obviously, you might see it around the locality. It's the freshest looking house in town, you know, or in the estate, because it looks different. So the internal wall insulation pump in the cavity of the house doesn't change in its appearance much, but the external one does change the appearance. So it's not suitable, let's say, for red brick or for stone sometimes. You want to keep those features. So the external wall insulation provides that, you know, that envelope, that insulation envelope around the house. Typically in a house like Nuala's, you know, if there hasn't been, you might be talking about a once in a generation upgrade, which might involve windows as well. A lot of people do external wall insulation. If the windows are old, they might do that at the same time, because then it's, you know, the fabric is done. Probably got a concrete floor. Not much you could do with a concrete floor, but then there's only 14 or 15% of heat loss through the floor. Now, I know a lot of people, and myself included, before I looked into it, think, well, the floor is cold, and, you know, and the reason why that is, well, it's just where we're standing, right? So our feet are intimately connected onto the ground. So in a cold house, you're going to feel it through your feet. But if you improve all the rest of the house, well, then the floor will warm as a result as well, and be just more comfortable. So typically you wouldn't do anything with a concrete floor, but you'd make your improvements of insulation elsewhere where it made sense to do it, where it's more cost-effective. With adding insulation then as well, then you got to really think about a smaller cottage, is that it's more straightforward to make that sealed and warm, rather than, let's say, a big complicated house with extensions on it where it might require a lot more. And in that case, then, just what I described for Nuala's house, at that point, then your house is heat pump ready. You can install a heat pump and it's going to work very efficiently. A small heat pump if it's a cottage, and it's going to work very efficiently in that.
So then, where then should Nuala be going then to look and find out what grant is suitable for her? Or does she go to the one-stop shop first? How do you line that part of it up?
Well, I suppose you're talking about a technical assessment. So you're talking about a home energy assessment now as well. So there's some grant funding available through SEOI for that. And what that will do in broad terms, it'll tell you your options. So in order to get, you know, your house to a heat pump, to a condition of heat pump readiness where you can put a heat pump in, it'll give you a step by step to get there. Our own report would give costings to that. So we'd let you know. Well, actually, where I would start off first in advising anyone was have a phone call or an online consultation. pretty confident I'd give a ballpark, let's say, what the cost would be, having went through all the house types. We're very experienced. We've done hundreds and hundreds of retrofits, and I suppose at that point to see if the home energy assessment is the way to go. Because of course you can insulate your house, and there's very good grants there for just insulation. So if Nuala's house is a detached house, there's grants there of up to 8,000 for, you know, that's went up from 4,500 and 6,000. So you know, there's significant even single measure grants to do insulation. So there's lots of different ways that you can go about it.
And is, I suppose, the one concern that I would have would be that you'd need to get, well, in my mind at least, I would imagine you'd need to be organised and make sure that you've gotten the grant before you spend the money. Or how does that part of it work? You know, because obviously you don't want to start the grant application too late in the day.
No, absolutely. And that's often people can do the best work, you know, and they might find a shorter certificate or they haven't made an application for the funding in time. And that can be really frustrating. So I suppose, let's say Electric Ireland Superhomes, we're all over that extent. We're highly focused. Our service, a large part of our service is about getting the grant for our customers. So we've been successful in 100% of our projects, but it's just been diligent and staying on top of it. But I might explain maybe briefly how that's achieved last thing. So
yeah, that'd be great.
So there's when we assess a house, we would do a BUR on the house as is. Okay, and it's not just a BUR, there's other things we would look at, like air tightness and cold bridging, important things that might mean that you'd have to design the house in a particular way. The second part of that, we do a BUR on a future house. Okay, so here's the ideal house that reaches all the targets for the grant. It's led by a heat pump, so we only do heat pumps. You know, we moved away from fossil fuels years back. So that's, we know exactly where we're trying to bring a house with air tightness and ventilation included as that. And there's a BUR for that. You know, and all of the measures required to get that BUR then are what's grant funded. And so as long as we follow that, and we're very careful about following the spec of the plan that we put together originally, well, then the BUR at the end is really going to confirm what we know is going to happen. And that's how we know that you qualify for the grant. So we take responsibility for that. And we do that through the BUR design process.
Okay, that's really valuable information, because I know it's paperwork I don't think is anybody's best friend, but it is in this case. It's worth it financially to get your paperwork organized and make sure you've got all your I's dotted and T's crossed if you are going to try and get one of these grants. And as I said, I know obviously David here is speaking with us from Electric Ireland Superhomes, and this is their business, but there are many other providers around there. So obviously the best advice, shop around and go and get your assessment with the company you find best for your needs. David, thank you so much for joining us on Let's Go Green this evening. It's been absolutely fascinating speaking to you, and hopefully we might touch base with you again in the not too distant future. But for now, thank you very much for your time.
Thanks, Ashley.
Take care. We'll be back after the break with some music. Stay tuned here to Midlands 103. You're listening to Let's Go Green here on Midlands 103. Well, I hope you have enjoyed our show this evening. And I just wanted to take a moment to please do ask you to get in touch with me. I really do want to make this a community-driven show. So if you want to get in contact with me directly, you can contact me through the Midlands 103 website and I will get those messages. But if you want to just drop me an email, if that's easier for you, send me an email to letsgogreen@midlands103.com. So that's letsgogreen@midlands103.com. Well, thank you for joining us this evening on Let's Go Green here on Midlands 103. Are you retrofitting your home at the moment? Would you like to come on air and talk us through the process? How have you found it? How are you just getting your head around the whole ordeal of it? Or is it much easier than I think it will be? I would love to hear from you. You can email me at letsgogreen@midlands103.com. As I said earlier, we're short on time tonight, so I'm going to leave you now with Soda Blonde and Small Talk, and I'll be back same time next week on Midlands 103.